just wanna feel anything.
Welcome to the Clean and Filthy Podcast with your host, Matthew M.
Hello and welcome to the Clean and Filthy Podcast, where we are clean and serene with a filthy mind in between. I am your host, Matthew M., and I am an addict in recovery. Welcome, everybody, back for episode 7. We got a great show for you today. Going to be going over step 7, going to be talking about my favorite moment of the week, and going to be answering more questions. So before we go any further, have to give a huge shout out to our episode sponsors. First off, we have Etc. by Emily. If you have any need for a staffing agency or you're looking for a job, check out all their information in the description below, as well as Metaphysical Minds. If you are needing any crystals or sage or other spiritual items, check them out in the description below. Also have to give a huge thank you and a huge shout out to our VIP members. These are people that support us on Patreon by making a donation, and they are Char, Clint, and Alex. If you are interested in helping grow this podcast, head on over to Patreon. You can get there by going to our website, www.cleanandfilthypodcast.com. And in the top right corner with all the other social media information is the Patreon link. And everybody who becomes a monthly contributor gets one of these awesome Clean and Filthy Podcast stickers. So huge shout out to everybody for the support, especially our VIP contributors, as well as everybody out there who's been helping this podcast grow, been downloading us, been watching us here live on YouTube. And for everybody who's on YouTube right now, what up? Let's get that chat going. And to anybody who's not watching live on YouTube but would like to, we do this every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Arizona time. So just head on over to YouTube.com and search for the Clean and Filthy Podcast. Please make sure to like, comment, and subscribe to our channel, and then you will get a notification when we go live. If you're watching live right now and you want to help this channel grow, please make sure to click subscribe on YouTube. We only need a few more subscribers, and we will be able to have our custom URL, which will be really good for branding. If you are watching live on YouTube and you don't mind helping us out, please go ahead and download this episode and all of our episodes wherever you get your podcasts. We are listed on all podcast directories. And if you hear something you like, please make sure to share it with somebody, share it with everybody. That's how we're going to grow. So thank you, everybody, for being here. I really appreciate it. I love all the positive feedback and the areas for improvement. You know, I love getting notes. So if you have any notes for how we can make this product even better, please send them my way. You can contact me directly at Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com, or you can contact me on any social media. We're on all of them. We might even start a Discord here. I don't know. I think that might be the next step. We might get on to Twitch, Discord. We might do some, we got some plans. So also, before we go any further, I have to give a huge thank you to our music for this show. A huge shout out to Valentino Khan, Alice in Wonderland, for allowing us to use anything as the theme music for the Clean and Filthy Podcast. If you would like to download that and show support to them for supporting us, please check out the download link below in the description. So before we go any further, we got to do the intro so everybody knows what we are. Again, my name is Matthew M. I am an addict in recovery, and this is a podcast for 12-step recovery, but this is not a 12-step meeting. This does not replace calling your sponsor, working steps, going to meetings. This is not affiliated with any specific 12-step fellowship. I will not be giving any recommendations for meetings, home groups, anything like that. If you are interested in getting involved in recovery and would like information about meetings or other service opportunities or anything of the sort, please reach out to me directly, again, at Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com. But this is not the point of this podcast. We are here to be a resource, but we will not be endorsing or speaking from a point of authority on any fellowship or anything like this. At the end of the day, I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and a little bit of my opinion with what has worked for me. But I'm not speaking as a point of authority for any 12-step fellowship. So I just want to make sure that is known. I will not be endorsing a fellowship, a meeting, anything like that. We just want to be able to be a community resource to help get the word out about recovery and what us addicts in recovery do, and really just try to carry a message of hope and love and excitement and fun, because recovery is a lot of fun. Contrary to what a lot of people think, recovery is a lot of fun. So just want to make sure we get that out of the way before we go into our first segment. Now let's head to our first segment.
Let's head to the lab for some R&D. Recovery and development.
That's right. We are in the lab. We got our lab coats. We got our safety goggles on, and we're going to do some recovery and development. This is the section of the show where each week we discuss a different step, tradition, concept, principle, or anything else that really relates to 12-step recovery. Going through, kind of giving some information about it, and also how us as addicts implement these things in our lives. If you're not an addict in recovery, that's fine, because the beautiful thing about recovery and working the steps is that they really have something to offer everyone. I genuinely believe that. And I've been getting a lot of comments from people who aren't addicts and aren't in recovery, but are still really getting a lot out of this podcast. And I love that. I absolutely love that, because as I've said before, you know, my main goal for this podcast is to help people. And that doesn't mean just helping addicts who aren't in recovery or who are in recovery or anything like that. It's just about helping people. So this segment allows, you know, me as a recovering addict to show and explain what has worked, but also can give some insight to people out there. So stick around, you know, maybe you'll hear something that'll make a lot of sense within your life. And that's definitely what our goal is here. So week 7, this is episode 7. We are on step 7. That's right. What does step 7 say, you ask? Well, it says we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now, hopefully everybody here listened to last week's episode. Hopefully everybody listen to step 6, because step 6 and step 7 really work hand in hand. You know, you can't work step 7 without having work a step 6. Steps are in, you know, order for a reason. But this is the second piece that's necessary to truly move forward in our lives, to truly look at all those character defects that have been very apparent in our lives, and especially came, you know, to fruition, if you will, in steps 4, 5, and 6. And now this is our opportunity to do something about them. So again, first off, always got to give the God disclaimer. If the word God in there scares you, scared me, very beginning, hated that. All that's required is a God of our understanding. Again, as we discussed in steps 2, steps 3, that can be anything that helps us. And the element of a higher power is very important in this step. It might not seem like it in some ways, and it can be somewhat confusing, but an element of a higher power is very important in this step. So if you have an issue with the word God, change that to whatever works: good orderly direction, group of drug addicts, higher power, sky daddy, whatever you want to put on it, whatever works for you is all that has to matter. It just has to work for you. So the thing about this step, well, first off, if anybody hasn't listened to episode 6 of the Clean and Filthy podcast, please do. Last week, please go check it out. Thank you. Appreciate it. But if you haven't, you might ask, what is a character defect? So a character defect, or a shortcoming, and those are used interchangeably in step 6 and 7, are those things that cause pain and misery all of our lives. As we talked about last week, they're basic human characteristics that have been corrupted or perverted in a way by total self-centeredness. So this step isn't simply asking to have these defects removed. We don't just, you know, just say, hey, remove them. We're good? Nah, it doesn't work that way. Does not work that way at all. This step is about the need for spiritual preparation. This step is about the process of having these defects removed. Because it's not just a snap of the fingers. We don't just Thanos snap and, you know, our character defects just turn into dust and float away. That's not how it works. It truly is a process, as are most things in recovery. You know, there is no easy, super fast, quick way. Everything we do in recovery has a process to it. And this is definitely no different. So what are the spiritual principles that are most important within step seven? Well, we got to surrender. There's definitely a deeper element of surrender that we first built, you know, in that first step, that we built on more in the fourth and fifth step. And this also surrendering to the power of our higher power, surrendering to the process of the program. Surrender is very important. We also really need to have trust and faith. We need to have trust in this process. We need to have trust in a higher power. We need to have faith that a higher power will be able to do for us what we haven't been able to do on our own. Again, why that higher power piece is so important on step seven. And we're going to get into that a little bit further. Another thing that's very important is patience. Because if you're an addict like me, whew, we are an impatient bunch.
That part.
Very, very impatient. I want what I want, and I want it now. And you're not operating on my time frame and my schedule, so I have a problem with it. Again, that's not how step seven works. This is a process, and some character defects take longer to be removed. They take more work. They take more effort to be removed. So realize that patience is so vital in this step. And thankfully, like I said, the steps are in order. So hopefully by the time we're getting to our seventh step, we're have a little bit better understanding of how the spiritual principle of patience plays into our lives. Hopefully. If not, talk to your sponsor. that's always the default. Talk to your sponsor. Call your sponsor. And then finally, the most important part of step seven is humility. Now, I love step seven because of humility, because when I first came into the program, I had a very different perspective on what humility was. You know, my thought process on humility was just be humble, as Kendrick would say, sit down, little bitch, be humble. Don't be Kanye. Don't walk into a room like you're Mr. Big Dick, like your shit don't stink. You know, don't be egotistical. That was my thought process on what humility was. My thought process was, okay, all that matters is that, you know, I'm not thinking I'm number one, best, most amazing human being in the world. That's what I thought humility was. That's what I thought being humble was. But within the literature, it specifically says that that is not what humility is. Humility and to be humble is to accept and honestly try to be ourselves, to realize that we're not the best, but we're not the worst. We are how we are, and seeing that through a true lens. That's part of the reason why in the fourth step, we look at our assets in addition to our liabilities. That's why, you know, when we're going through the sixth step and we're looking at our character defects, we always qualify that with the fact that we are not our character defects. We are not simply a collection of our actions. And that's where humility truly comes into place. Humility is a sense of our own humanness. And this step allows us to acknowledge our mistakes, accept responsibility for our part, no longer blaming others. And I mean, for an addict like me, every single thing that happened in my life, every single bad thing was always because of some other situation. It was never because of me. It was never my fault. I could specifically do it, but the only reason I did it was because of this situation. The only reason that I stole was because I was able to steal, not because I went and stole something. The only reason that I got high was because I couldn't deal with my feelings about this person. It was because, oh, well, this or that. This By working the fourth and fifth and sixth and then seventh step, we are able to accept our responsibility. And when we're able to accept our responsibility and stop blaming others, that equals humility. When we're able to see our part and take that responsibility, we're able to live in humility. And that is a lot easier said than done in a lot of areas. I see myself included, addicts with a lot of clean time who have certain character defects that we still default to blame. We still default to, yeah, but it was because of, it was there, them, not me. And that's in just obviously not living in humility. It takes time, but I can tell you that it is very possible to do. And within humility, we're able to build this, well, really within working the steps, we're able to start developing this positive self-image. We're able to practice spiritual principles. And humility is acknowledging the positive things that we have to offer. It's realizing that all of the negative things don't make us who we are, and we have positive to actually offer the world. Now, I want to get into the higher power element of it because there are definitely some things that, you know, are very important from a perspective of a higher power. And that's why this step is so important within a spiritual preparation for going, you know, into the eighth and ninth step, and then really working on the spiritual elements in the 10th, 11th, and 12th. Having that element of higher power, and it might be difficult. You might think, well, how am I asking my higher power to really, you know, remove these things for me? How does the higher power element come in here? The first thing I can say is that for anybody who has recognized a character defect and then not been able to not act on it, double negative there, whatever. If you can see a character defect and you know it's a character defect and you still act on it, then obviously I didn't have the willpower to do it. I didn't have the ability to handle my own life. And that second where we're seeing that maybe I'm not all powerful, maybe I'm not the end all be all within my life, that is a glimpse of humility. You know, it says in our literature that humility is the result of getting honest with ourselves. And that's that honesty thing. Honesty, honesty, honesty. Honesty is very difficult for addicts because our entire livelihood was surrounded with dishonesty. Surrounded. Even if we're, you know, somebody that everybody knows we're using, everybody sees we're using, we're still probably lying about how much we use. We're still probably lying about, you know, the ways we use or the substances we use or this or that. You know, for me personally, most of my friends knew I used, but they didn't know everything I used. They didn't know how I used. They didn't know how often I used. So that element is just shrouded in dishonesty. Everything we do, you know, it has some level of dishonesty to it. So that's why honesty is so important within recovery. That's why it's mentioned so often in the literature, so specifically in people's shares. Because not only do we have to be honest with others, but we have to be honest with ourselves. And as we've talked about on previous episodes, self-honesty, I'm amazing at manipulating and lying, especially to myself. And I especially was in active addiction. But we don't have to live that way anymore. You know, we are able to have feelings. It's okay to have feelings and to show them. For a lot of us, before we came into recovery, we didn't realize that. Oftentimes, we didn't even realize we had feelings because we were so numb. But even once we started to see them, we felt, nope, can't show this. Can't do it. I'm not allowed to do that. I'm not allowed to have feelings. What are you talking about? Mm-mm. But when we do that, when we're able to do that, we become softer. And not softer in like a street, you know, oh man, you soft as hell. Mm-mm. In a vulnerable way. in a caring way, in a compassionate way, in a unifying way. Because when I'm softer and I'm able to show my vulnerability because of working honesty and humility into my life, somebody else can see that and they can identify and they can see, wow, he's sitting in a meeting crying. I didn't think I was supposed to cry. I'm a tough man. Stupid sexist thoughts, whatever. But I'm a tough man. I can't cry. When I'm seeing this super big tough guy sitting there crying, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's okay. And then we can start processing these feelings. You know, and the element of that, of knowing, of the humility speaks to knowing that we are doing the best we can with what we have in our lives. Just like others. Just like other addicts in the rooms of recovery. I'm doing the best I can. They're doing the best they can. So we have, again, this common unifying thread. And at the end of the day, humility is essential to living a clean life. It's essential. Now, the beautiful thing, as I've said, with how steps are set up, is steps are set up to lay the groundwork of humility in our spirits. That's why this step is so important spiritually, because it allows us to bring that higher power into one of the things that we have the most difficulty with, which is our character defects. And we're going to get into kind of how we do that and kind of what we do that. But it says in the literature that the main objective of step 7 is to get out of ourselves and strive to achieve the will of our higher power. Third step stuff. But this is building off of that. Again, like why the steps are in order. Because we take pieces from each one of the steps and then implement them in different ways in future steps, in further steps. We could not have worked a 7-step, obviously without a 6-step, but also without a 2nd and 3rd step. If we don't have a concept of a higher power, if we don't have a concept of what our higher power's will is for us, how could we be attempting to align our will with our higher powers in the 7th step? How could we do that? It wouldn't be possible. But again, as we talked about last week, when we do that, when we align our will with our higher power's will, we are in, I almost said inherently again. Got to work on that. I might get a counter up here in the corner of the screen with an inherently counter every time I say inherently. Maybe that'll make me stop saying it so much. But within the steps, you know, if we don't work through those things, if we don't have that higher power, if we don't have something to have faith in, to pull strength from, on one of the worst, most disgusting parts of who we are, our character defects, how can we ever expect to have anything change? I mean, that's not possible. If we're simply trying to do it on our own, why would anything change? It never has in the past. Just like if we tried stop using on our own, it never worked in the past. So why would this be any different? Why, you know, again, insanity, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So that's one of the greatest things about how our steps are set up, is that they do build on each other, and we're able to find those pieces and grow within each step, and then take something from the 3rd step and apply it in this way. And that's why, you know, the 7th step is such a spiritual pathway. It is a blueprint. It is a way that we develop that connection from a basis of humility. We rely on that strength of our higher power. And just by doing that, just by relying and asking for guidance and asking for help, that is an expression of humility. Because I am realizing I can't do it on my own. I can't. So again, if you have any issue with the spirituality aspect, with the higher power aspect, please get that, you know, kind of worked on before really diving into the 7th step, because you could technically work a 7th step, but you're not going to get what the true meaning of the 7th step is without that element of spirituality. You're just not going to. You could answer the questions technically, but that's not going to gain the actual benefit of the seventh step. So, you know, a lot of people will say, like I said earlier, you know, I just say this seventh step, they're gone. But what this process allows us to do is change literally every single day, not by wishing, not by just asking, but by actions and prayer. And again, if you have an issue with the word prayer, I get it. I did too. Still do some days. I understand. All prayer needs to be is just put in whatever works there for you. It doesn't have to be the word prayer. Prayer might have two religious connotations for you. That's fine. All it is just asking our higher power for guidance. Prayer is simply the most used, most widely accepted term. But if that doesn't work for you, that's fine. Then find something that does. Because we can't do this step without asking for that guidance from our higher power. And asking for guidance or prayer in a situation that brings up character defects is how we have them removed from our lives. You know, we ask constantly, and sometimes there are certain character defects that come up in me when I'm dealing with certain people in my life that every single time I deal with them, I have to ask for guidance. I have to simply say, please help me not act in defect. Please help me not respond in defect. That can be every single time that I deal with somebody. And that, again, is where the patience element comes in. Because I can tell you personally, my own experience, strength, and hope on this topic is that the more we do it, the more that we act in spiritual principle and not in defect, the easier it is to not act in defect. If we are asking our higher power and relying on our higher power to assist in this process, then the go-to of defect gets a little bit slower, happens a little less frequently, a little bit less. Still sometimes happens because we're human. We are not perfect spiritual beings. We are not holier than thou, walking on water, levitating while we're meditating. We are human. And that is what is beautiful about having humility, is that that is okay. We can see ourselves how we truly are. So what are some instances where we could apply spiritual principles? Simple thing. What if we, you know, if one of my character defects is anger and somebody cuts me off in traffic, rather than, you know, doing one of these things and honking at him and freaking out hardcore, we can simply take a second and say, I hope they're all right. You know, if somebody's riding my ass on the freeway, even though I'm always driving fast, so somebody's riding my ass on the freeway and then passing me, honking, flashing lights, whatever, maybe there's an emergency. Maybe they just got a phone call that their wife's in labor or their dog got hit by a car or something. Because when we take ourselves out of ourselves and we're then looking from another's perspective, we are operating in humility, because we're taking away the focus from our own self-interest, our own self-wants, our own ego, and we're putting them on something else. You know, it happens a lot when doing area or regional service and we have to deal with a personality that we don't like, or a person in our home group, or even just at work or family or at the gas station where I go and buy my bangs, whatever it is. When we know we're going to be in that situation, we can ask for guidance. We can ask for guidance. And that right there is strengthening our spiritual connection. That's our way of asking to have these defects removed. I really almost wish the words of the step were, you know, have these defects worked on. Because saying that, you know, we ask our higher power or ask God to remove these defects, that seems like it's a boop type of thing. And it's not. It is a very slow process for most character defects. for most. There are some that are so egregious, you know, that maybe we can have them removed very quickly. Maybe they can be something that can be removed. I'll say for me personally, I don't know if it was a true character defect, but for me personally, I did a lot of shoplifting. A lot of it. Whole bunch of it. And I have yet to steal anything since I've been clean. Just for today, as we say. So that in itself, that was a character defect that I was able to have removed. Not saying that it didn't pop up in my head. Like I've shared the story before where the first time I went into Walmart with, like, you know, 72 days clean, first thing I did was go back to my old habits of like grabbing multiple things, knowing I'm not going to buy any of them, but putting them in my cart and then looking for where the cameras are. That's where my mind went automatically. Thankfully, I hadn't worked a seventh step at this point, but thankfully I had a connection with a higher power and I had a belief that it wasn't okay. It wasn't spiritual to do because I'm working an honest program. And so then I put them back. But that doesn't mean that those defects don't pop up, especially ones that are deeper within our core, especially ones that have been there for so much longer. Those take more time to work through. Those take more time to get past. Those take more time to actually be removed from us. It could take years. It could take decades of recovery, of doing work on specific core defects before we are no longer encumbered by them. But the more work we do on them, the more infrequently that they pop up. Or when they do pop up, we don't automatically revert back to our old ways. And again, the best way that we do that is by practicing the spiritual principle instead of acting in that defect. You know, any time that we can act differently than we have in our past is our higher power working in our lives, kind of like in the second step. Anytime we can do something different, we can react or respond to a situation differently, we're showing sanity. So now we're able to show this reliance in our higher power and our higher power working in our lives. You know, anytime that I don't react to a specific situation by screaming, my higher power is working in my life. Anytime I don't immediately go to being egotistical, that's working in my life. Anytime that I'm feeling, you know, kind of inside myself, I reach out to somebody else and see how they're doing. I'm getting out of myself. Higher power working in our lives. And one of the most beautiful things about that connection with our higher power, that spirituality that we're building, is that we can stop looking at what we get from life, from recovery, from our significant other, from our job, and we can start looking at how we can contribute. We can stop trying to worry about being understood and instead focus on understanding. One of the best ways to stop, you know, fighting to be loved ourselves is by loving others. So for every character defect, there is a spiritual principle that is the opposite of it. And when those defects pop up, if we focus on those spiritual principles, which is, like I said, sometimes a lot easier said than done. But if we can do that, then we get a little bit further away. We get a little bit further away from that defect. But I can tell you personally, from my experience, strength, and hope, is that if we lose that connection with our higher power and we stop asking for guidance in a situation, it can snowball. It can snowball very, very quickly. It's kind of like I said last week, when we act in defect, it makes it easier for the next time to act in defect. You lie one time, the second time's easier. You cheat one time, the second time gets easier. You steal one time, the second time gets easier. And that is very possible if we lose that connection with our higher powers. If we lose that connection to ask for guidance as soon as character defect comes up, not after we've, you know, lived in it for a little bit, not after we dabbled in it for a little bit, not after we stuck our toe in the pool and seen how the water is, immediately, immediately feel that character defect coming up and wow, I need guidance. Help me, as Kevin Hart would say. Because if we do that immediately, then it becomes easier to do that immediately. It becomes easier to live in that spiritual principle instead of in defect. And sometimes it's fun to live in defect. I'm not gonna sit here and say it's not. Sometimes living in defect is fun until we truly have worked that sixth step. And then it really doesn't get fun anymore. You know, I talked about this last week, is that once we have developed our list of defects and we know what our defects are, and now after working a seventh step and actually asking my higher power to have it removed, those defects, they lose a lot of the appeal. If I'm truly living a spiritual existence, if I'm truly and honestly asking for guidance from my higher power, it loses a lot of its appeal because now I'm cognizant of it. Now I'm cognizant of it, and I can no longer just, as I said last week, ignorance is bliss. Well, it's no longer bliss. It's no longer ignorance once we've worked that sixth step. And now it's super isn't, because not only are we aware of these defects, but now we're actually asking for help to have them removed. That's like double not ignorance anymore. I don't know. That's some kind of spiritual principle, exponential math or something. I don't know. But it makes it that much more difficult. And the greatest feeling of truly working your sixth step and your seventh step is seeing that growth. It's being able to look back at who we were and now seeing who we're becoming. And for me, that was something that I wasn't really prepared for in a lot of ways. I knew that I was changing. I knew that I was growing. But the first time that I didn't act on a character defect, specifically with this one situation that's very prevalent in my life, it was such an amazing feeling. It was a feeling that I actually was showing growth. I had, again, quantifiable evidence that I was growing. And that is one of the greatest gifts I've experienced in recovery, is being able to see that I'm not that person that I was when I first, you know, damn sure wasn't a person that was in active addiction. And even if other people don't see it, even if other people can never get past the things that I've done in my past, whether it be harming them, whether it be, you know, just the pain that I've caused, the anguish, the difficulty, maybe I can never change their preconceived notions or their, you know, evidence conceived notions of me. But I know in my heart how much I've changed. Other people around me, especially people in recovery, can see who I was when I walked into the rooms, you know, over 3 years ago to now who I am today. And for an addict like me, who loves growth and seeing what's next and what's next and the unknown and what's next and how can I learn more, seeing where I was at 60 days compared to where I was at 150 days compared to where I was at 365 days to now where I am at over 3 years days is, it's one of the greatest feelings I've ever felt, because I'm able to see that I'm becoming a better person. And because of that, wanting to help others become better people and help the world become a better place. And that's not to be all, again, high and mighty or sanctimonious, but that's just a statement of what is important to me now. How much things have changed within me to where my priorities are no longer myself. Now the element of being selfless and being able to help has replaced the desire to have all the stuff and do all the things. I still want to do things, but I don't want to do it if it's at the detriment of others. Before, I didn't give a fuck. If it benefited me, we were doing it. Damages other people? Meh, it's not me. Causes other people pain? Meh, it's not me. But now, today, I don't have to live that way. There's a quote in the literature, and we're going to close with this, that I love so very much. And it says, one day we'll realize that some of the ways we used to act have become as alien as spiritual principles were when we first started practicing them. After such a revelation, we may begin things about the person we were when we first came into recovery and how little we resemble that person now. I butchered that. I apologize. But it's so true. Looking back and seeing who we were and now looking at who we're becoming, you know, productive members of society, loving, caring, compassionate human beings. We aren't that old stereotype of, you know, just a filthy addict. We're not just that stereotype of just some fucking junkie. Once a junkie, gonna die a junkie. No, we're recovering addicts. And there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of us worldwide. And the spiritual principles we develop within ourselves translate to developing into the world as well. And that's not for everybody. Every single, you know, addict isn't out there saying, I want to change the world, and that's okay. That's okay. But we are able to acquire the skills and the spiritual peace to be better people. And if we are simply just better people, we simply aren't, you know, stealing so much from Toys R Us that they go out of business. Sorry, guys, that probably had something to do with that. That we aren't out committing crimes. We aren't out breaking into cars, raising insurance rates. We aren't out, you know, contributing to the deaths of people by selling drugs. We're making the world a better place. Even if we aren't doing it as selflessly, we're able to help make the world a better place. And that's a beautiful, powerful thing about recovery that I think a lot of people don't really look at. You know, if we are doing better as humans, we're helping society do better as well. So that's what we got for the seventh step. I love the seventh step. It's one of my favorite steps. Everything about I love the element of humility, especially because it was so different than what my perspective was prior to coming into the rooms of recovery. So really excited to discuss, you know, step seven. And a lot of times it's kind of an overlooked step in a lot of ways, but it's, you know, very, very, very vital within, you know, the life of a recovering addict. So it's time for our next segment. This is called My Favorite Moment of the Week. Now, this is the part of the show where we discuss, this is a lot of opinion here, but this is where we discuss something that's occurred in the last week. And how was my favorite moment? It could be something from news, from politics, from pop culture, sports, really whatever. Maybe just a meme on Instagram I really liked. It's kind of turned into my weekly recap with my favorite moment mixed in there. But there were a few things this week that were fire. First off, Falcon Winter Soldier, amazing. If you like Marvel, you better watch it. It's amazing. I'm so happy. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it.
That part.
Yeah. Second thing, March Madness. My bracket is fucked, but Michigan is still alive, and I have them winning it all. So there's still some hope. Next thing was, oh my God, the memes that came out from the Ever Given shipping ship getting stuck in the Suez Canal was hilarious. The fact that $9.5 billion of trade was lost every single day because this damn ship, it was hilarious. Truly, there was a meme of this bulldozer, which is a full size bulldozer, trying to dig out the side of the ship. And it's like that big next to the ship that's like that big. It was awesome. There were some amazing things. Also, Formula One's back. I love racing, especially Formula One. Shout out Lewis Hamilton. Got that first win of the season. Mercedes taking it again. Get him another one. He's a beast. All right. So now we're going to get, that actually segues well into my favorite moment of the week. Oh, I'm getting hype. I'm getting so hype. All right. If anybody follows me on Snapchat and you know me at all, you already know what my favorite moment of the week is. But for those of you who don't, whoo, I do a little thing on my Snapchat because I live in Scottsdale and I'm around Paradise Valley a lot and I'm around a lot of really nice supercars and hypercars. I do a thing on my Snapchat called Recovery Car Spotter Life, where I take pictures and videos of really nice supercars, hypercars, and post them. And oh baby, Recovery Car Spotter Life officially saw a unicorn in the wild, and that of a Bugatti Chiron. If you don't know what a Bugatti is, if you don't know who Bugatti is as a company, we're going to give you a little background of that. If you haven't been, you know, following rappers for the last few years, you might not know, but Bugatti is a French company started back in 1909 by Ettore Bugatti. They made high-end cars, planes, trains, and race cars. They had massive racing success through the 1920s. They won the first ever Monaco Grand Prix. Then World War II happened, and yeah, most of their factories and land were destroyed since they were in France. Then their lead, Ettore, died in 1947, and the company struggled until 1952. In the 50s, they attempted to rebrand, bring back a race car, underperformed, company was halted, ended up being sold for airplane parts in 1963. All right. Not off to a good start. 1987, they're bought by an Italian entrepreneur, rebranded, revitalized to make limited production cars. After a couple really cool prototypes, they made the EB110, which had this gorgeous quad turbo V12 engine. Sadly, when they finally were released to market was in the mid or early to mid 90s, and a recession, horrible economy, they didn't sell. Company closed in 1995. All remaining assets liquidated again. Again, not off to a very good restart. 1998, they get acquired by Volkswagen. Multiple concepts were made, multiple different, you know, just one-off things to show at different auto shows, Geneva, you know, Santa Barbara, wherever. And then finally, in 2005, the Bugatti Veyron was made. And if you, you know, were familiar with mid-2000s rap, I'm sure you probably heard the song, "And I Woke Up in a New Bugatti." Probably. You probably saw one of your favorite rappers driving around in a Bugatti. Or at least pretending that they own the Bugatti. And probably renting it. Whatever. Veyron was an amazing car. Absolutely amazing car. Ridiculous specifications. Incredible. Made it for 10 years. Saw one of those in the wild. They ended up making 500 of them with a bunch of different special editions. Amazing car. Saw one of them in the wild. And what I mean by in the wild, actually being driven on the streets. Not at Barrett Jackson car show. Not at some, you know, SEMA car show. Actually on public city streets. And then in 2016, they debuted the Chiron, which is named after their most successful race car driver from the 20s. And this thing has an 8-liter quad turbo W16 engine, making 1,500 horsepower and 1,180 pound-feet of torque. This engine is massive. Okay. It also weighs 4,400 pounds. To give you a little realization of how much weight that really is, another major hypercar is called the Pagani Huayra BC. It only weighs 2,600 pounds. A standard minivan weighs close to 5,000, a little bit more pounds. So this is essentially almost the weight of a minivan. and it proceeds to go 0 to 60 in 2.4 seconds, 0 to 186 miles per hour in 13.6 seconds, and 0 to 249 miles an hour in 32.6 seconds. Now, we're going to get into this element of speed because I like going fast. I am a sports car guy. I apologize to anybody who's listening right now who does not care about cars. But at the end of the day, this part of the segment is for me because this was absolutely my favorite moment of the week. Even if you don't like cars, hopefully you like my passion for telling this story and giving you some background on Bugattis. Maybe you'll be on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire one day and they'll ask you a question about Ettore Bugatti and you can say, huh, thanks, addict Matthew M., for giving me the answer to this question. And then hopefully you become a supporting member on the Clean and Filthy podcast. That'd be cool. So this element of speed, right? It's been this duel between hypercar companies of who can get to the fastest. And Bugattis are so ridiculously fast that you actually have to have two separate keys to unlock the top speed of a Bugatti Chiron, which is 261 miles an hour. It is limited to that. You can only go 243 miles an hour with one key. Put in the second one, get the rest of it. All right. 261 miles an hour, right? That's fucking nuts for the record. Like 260 miles an hour is fucking nuts. But they said, nah, son, that's not enough. Mm-mm. And they proceeded to release the Super Sport 300 Plus, which officially now is the fastest car in history, going 304.77 miles. And that is so ridiculous. Like, I've been fast in vehicles before. I've been 155 miles an hour in a Mercedes SL that was electronically limited at 155 miles an hour. I have hit the limiter on a 2004 Suzuki Hayabusa 1300. You know, that's fast. That's 176 miles an hour. And the thought of going another 100 miles an hour plus over that, it, for somebody like me, that is so exciting and so just, I'm trying to go 200. I'm trying to be part of the 200 club. That's one of my goals, you know, within the next few years is to somehow, they have different events where you can, you know, pay and ride along or, you know, sometimes even drive if you pay enough, you know, in some super duper hypercar and break 200 miles an hour. But now, you could officially be part of the 300 Club. Any human being buying one of the 30 300 plus Super Sports could do that. Now, caveat to that is you're doing that on your own risk or at your own risk because even though it has been done by Bugatti, no tire manufacturer actually confirms that their tire is possible to do that for any extended amount of time. That's another reason why the car, you know, the normal car is limited to 261 miles an hour because anything beyond that might be exceeding the capacity for this tire. And I got to see one in real life on a road. They start at $2.9 million for one car, one car. They go up to $4 million, depending on which option you have. Currently, there have been 270 made out of the 500 that they're going to make. 200 of which, of the first cars, were all sold before the first Chiron was actually made and delivered. Now, of the 270 that are out there, 150 of them are special edition. They're more on the $4 million side. So they're probably not really out within the world. They're sitting in some sheik's, you know, garage in Dubai. They're hanging out in Singapore in some crazy vending machine looking parking garage. You know, they're in Beverly Hills just sitting, collecting dust. They're on Instagram. Shout out to some awesome people on Instagram that have a Sharon. So really, if you think about it, there's probably about 120 of them that are actually out there. And I saw one of them. And there's a, you know, I see a lot of really nice cars. Again, if you follow me on Snapchat, you'll see that. But as soon as I'm driving down Tatum Boulevard, if you're here in Scottsdale, you know Tatum Boulevard, just past Pinnacle Peak, and I see 8 headlights. And I know those headlights. But my mind's like, well, you know what that car is, but it can't be. It can't actually be. It can't be. It's like, nah, it's not. Oh, wait, is it? Oh, it is. Ah! Proceeds to pass me. I do a slightly illegal U-turn. And of course, with my luck, a fire truck is coming up behind. So I have to pull over. And now it turns with the yellow light onto Pinnacle Peak. And I am filled with dread. My goosebumps that I just got again changed to complete dread and sadness that I wasn't going to be able to see this thing and, you know, just experience it. So you better believe that I hopped onto Pinnacle Peak. And I cannot confirm nor deny that I was breaking any kind of speed limits in any way, shape, or form. But of course, my luck, I'm stuck behind like 4 people. And I'm like, it's gone. It's gone. I don't know. Once it got to Cave Creek, I don't know if it went right or left. I lost it. And then turned around that little bend right before turning onto Cave Creek. And there it was in all its beauty. And I got to get there right behind it, right as it started to turn. And those quad turbos started spooling up on that W16 engine and it roared. And I got goosebumps. And I was literally, it was the most giddy and excited I have been in probably about as long as I can remember, to be quite honest. I was so excited that I'm trying to keep up with it in my little 4-cylinder Camry. Thankfully, we were on a public road, so he decided not to, you know, go 261 miles an hour, and I was able to get a video of it. And I just got goosebumps again. That, to me, was everything. Because for somebody like me, who is a car guy, I love cars. I love cars more than most things, honestly. Not more than my recovery, but more than most, you know, pretty much more than any physical object. Honestly, as much as I love sex, if you offered me a Chiron with fully paid insurance and, you know, taxes, and I couldn't have sex for a year, sign me up. Yo, sign me up. Sign me up right now. If they told me that I couldn't, you know, self-release, that might be a little bit more difficult, but I digress. Still probably sign me up. Because to me, cars are just, they're everything. They're gorgeous. They're machinery. They're technology. They're excitement. They're goosebump inducing. And to be able to see that on the road, to see $3+ million driving next to me is an experience I will never forget. You know, I've had experiences from my childhood where I saw a Ferrari F50 on the roads in Paris, where I saw a Ferrari F40 in the roads in Marbella, Spain. And I remember those. Those were like core memories in my life. This memory will be one of those type of things. So without any shadow of a doubt, that was my absolute favorite moment of the week. I am sorry if I lost anybody along the way who does not care about cars. Thank you for sticking here, and hopefully, you know, hopefully you learned something about Bugatti, and, you know, hopefully if you're ever out, you can see a unicorn in the wild as well. To see one of essentially 120 cars around the world is, I mean, the odds of that are just so ridiculous. At that time, at that place, everything had to line up perfectly for that, and it was without a doubt my favorite moment. So, side note, If you are out and about and you see a nice supercar or a nice hypercar, please send it over to me, Matthew, at queenoffilthypodcast.com, because I get immense joy. I get immense joy from puppy dogs. I get immense joy from really nice supercars and really good architecture. So send them over. I would be more than happy to view them. So that was my favorite moment of the week. Again, sorry if we lost anybody along the way, but for me, that was too exciting not to share. And I feel good about it. So thank you, everybody, for listening. That was for me. Thanks for coming to my TED Talks. And now we're going to get to our next segment, the Ask an Addict segment.
It's time to Ask an Addict with your host, Matthew M.
That's right. We are in our next segment of Ask an Addict. This is the part of the show where we answer questions asked by our viewers and our listeners by the resident addict here. Again, my name is Matthew. I'm an addict. If you're interested in having one of your questions answered, please send them over to, again, Matthew at cleanandfilthypodcast.com. Or if you're on the website at www.cleanandfilthypodcast.com, we have a Contact Us tab. You can fill up the information right there, send it on over to us, or you can just send it out through social media. I love answering questions, always have. They don't need to be recovery related. If they are recovery related, cool. I'm more than happy to do that as well, but they don't have to be. It's more than okay to ask whatever questions, as you'll see by one of the questions that's asked. So, again, this is experience, strength, and hope with opinion. This is not speaking from a position of a fellowship or this is the way, nothing of that. This is simply, you know, experience, strength, and hope with some opinion. So first question that was submitted was, why do some fellowships say sober and some fellowships say clean? And before we get into anything more than that, I wanted to read the actual definitions taken from, you know, Merriam-Webster. Maybe it was Merriam-Webster. What was the other one? I know one of them was Merriam-Webster here. But the definition of sober is not under the influence of alcohol or an intoxicant. The definition of clean is to be free of dirt or contamination, ceremonially or spiritually pure, free from drug addiction, or to remove or to eradicate. Now, I want to give a little bit of history. So the reason why the term sober was used was because it was specifically for a specific drug, specific substance, a liquid drug, if you will. And that speaks to the term sober, based on those definitions, speaks to not being under the influence, whereas being clean doesn't speak to any specific substance. You know, that's one of the things why with the fellowships that discuss being clean, it's not about a drug-specific program. It's not about a specific substance. It's not about, you know, okay, this one thing. It's about the disease of addiction. And the disease of addiction does not matter what the substance is, how you used it, how much or how little you did. It only looks at the disease of addiction. So it's not about a specific substance. But when the 12-step fellowship model was started back in 1929, it was about one specific substance. And it was about that one specific substance and only that one specific substance. No other substances were discussed or allowed to be discussed. So then when another fellowship that uses the word clean was begun in 1953, it was the alternative to a specific substance type of fellowship. It was a 12-step fellowship specifically about the disease of addiction. And so therefore, it wasn't about simply not being on a substance. It was about being completely clean and changing lives to live clean. Now, I will say that's what it started as, but now it's pretty much grown to where in fellowships that say sober, they look at being clean as simply testing negative for the substance, and they view sobriety as what what is now also called living clean. Whereas in other fellowships that use the term clean and recovery, they view sober as simply not using a substance. So it's gotten to the point now where there's some machinations, if you will, and there's some I don't want to say confusion, but they've almost become to where they mean the same thing. Both of them mean the one means the opposite in the other, if you will. And that's an interesting thing for me that I've looked at, because I always had seen the term sober to mean simply not under the influence of something, specifically the liquid drug, for the most part. I mean, that's where it first started from. But after doing more research into it, I saw a lot of information that was actually referencing being clean as simply not using, which for me personally, I don't see that. And I don't, that's not the thought process that I subscribe to. Again, my opinion. If that works for somebody else out there, cool. But for me personally, that's not the opinion of me. You know, being, you know, when I look at the two terms, I see sober as not being under the influence of something. Whereas being clean is not under the influence of anything, because again, it's not about a specific drug. I know, you know, I've seen people where they are sober from, you know, the liquid drug, but are still using other things, and they're perfectly okay with that. That is their definition of being sober, of their sobriety. And again, I'm not here to judge or say anything about anybody's recovery one way or the another, or about any fellowship. However works for you, if it works for you, cool. But for me personally, I look at being clean isn't just not putting any mind-altering or mood-changing chemical into my body, which I have not done, you know, for the past over 3 years, but it's also about clearing up those things within working steps to become a better person. You know, as I've said before, this isn't a drug program. This is a growth program. You know, I came here thinking I had a drug problem. I stay here because I realized I had a me problem. So, you know, for me, being in recovery and being clean and living clean is directly in line with not acting in defect, is directly in line with making amends, is directly in line with, you know, confessing my secrets, if you will, and admitting responsibility to them and developing that connection with a higher power. But I've seen, you know, other people in other fellowships are now using the term sobriety to mean the same thing. So really, at the end of the day, whatever fellowship you're in is the term that, you know, works for you. But I will say one thing that is very important is that when we're in a specific meeting of that fellowship, it's important to respect the language of that fellowship. If you're in a meeting that identifies as with the term sober, it's respectful to that meeting and to that fellowship to do the same. Just like if you're in a meeting that identifies as addicts and as clean or being in recovery, it is respectful to use that same language. By using the opposite language, it at the end of the day, there's a reason that the language is different. And, you know, it comes down to a level of just respecting the fellowship. You know, so that's something that gets asked a lot. My home group, which again, I'm not going to say what it is, but we have a lot of newcomers, you know, people with less than 30 days or people in treatment. And a lot of treatment centers might focus on one specific fellowship, and then maybe they'll come to my home group, which is a different fellowship. And then we'll start using terms interchangeably without really understanding why there's a difference or why the difference is important. Or, you know, the fact that simply using the language of that fellowship is a way to respect recovery in general, you know, whichever fellowship it is. So that's why we have two different things there. So that is the difference, you know, and why some say clean, some say sober. Again, if it works for you, cool. That's what matters. You know, I am not going to judge, promote, denigrate, you know, talk shit about whatever, any fellowship or anyone's recovery. If it works for you, cool. I just, you know, that is just my definition of the difference and why there is a difference. So, all right, next question. Now, this question, I really appreciate this question being answered. And here is evidence that all questions do not need to be recovery related. But I got a great question this week. And it took a lot more time and effort than I really was planning on putting into it. But I got a question that said, if you could choose one character in Marvel, who would it be, who and why? Anybody who knows me knows I love Marvel. If you don't know I love Marvel, this right here says, I love you 3000. If you don't know what that means, go watch Marvel movies. Marvel movies are amazing. I love superhero movies. I love comic books. I love superheroes. Marvel is the best. I will fight you if you tell me that DC is better. We will fight. Point blank, period. It will be a spiritual fight, but we will fight.
That part.
Nah.
That part.
Simple as that. Don't question Marvel. So, this question really took a lot of effort. And it kept me up thinking way longer than I really want to admit to. And there's just too many options. So I decided to put some parameters on it. I decided that we're only going to look at characters that have been active within the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the accompanying shows. So the Netflix shows, the Hulu shows, or the, you know, I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was on ABC. We're not going to look at the X-Men movies. We're not going to look at the Sony properties. We're not going to look at Deadpool, which is unfortunate because Deadpool would probably be one of my answers. We're not going to look at those things. We're just going to look at characters that are active or have been active within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's it. My addict tendencies told me to immediately go with Loki. Immediately go with Loki, because then, you know, here's that addict thought process. Then I could like create mirrors and I could be whoever I wanted to be and I could go rob Fort Knox. That was literally my first thought. Not happy to admit that, but it's truthful. Then I thought, okay, what about Thanos? Because Thanos with that Infinity Gauntlet, he is powerful AF. Literally just boop. Like, but he also, you know, is killing half of the entire galaxy. So I can't really vibe with that. But he's also super powerful and I kind of vibe with him. I thought he was a really good villain because I really vibed with him. Also loved Killmonger. I thought Killmonger was an amazing villain as well. I really vibed with him as well. And then there's the other part of me that really just wants to be Baby Groot, because I mean, Baby Groot and just dancing around is that's amazing. I love Baby Groot. Before we go any further, I wanted to do a short little spoiler warning here. If you are not familiar with Marvel movies or you are not up to date with them, we're going to have a little bit of spoilers here. I'm not going to go hardcore into them, but, you know, little spoilers. So then I went through the list of the people that I could really say, yeah, that's who I want to be. First off, Captain America. Great morals, great values. But honestly, I never really liked him in the comics. Really liked him more once the movies came out. And I cuss way too much. Couldn't be Captain America. Couldn't. Then we go to Tony Stark. And Tony Stark has always been my favorite character. He has always been my favorite character. Whether it's in the MCU, whether it was from the comics, I've always loved Tony Stark and Iron Man. But would I want to be him? Part of me says yes, because, you know, genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist. Plus, he's an addict, so I vibe with that. But I couldn't say that that's who I would want to be, because he's too egotistical and he's self-centered. And he doesn't think about the group, and he doesn't really have like a true moral code or ethics. And also, he's dead. So, I mean, maybe we could just go back and maybe I could still be alive. I don't know. Whatever. So it couldn't be Iron Man. Spider-Man, Hulk, both of them love the characters now in the MCU, but I never really liked them. I never liked Spider-Man. I thought Spider-Man was corny as hell. Always cheered for Venom. Always cheered for Carnage. Hated Spider-Man. Corny as hell. Shout out now. Tom Holland's done an amazing job, way better than any of the other Spider-Men. Again, I will fight you about that. So shout out to him. And Mark Ruffalo's been amazing, Bruce Banner. Thought he was great in Thor Ragnarok. Honestly, really think I look pretty good in purple shorts, so I could probably vibe with that. But still, wasn't a huge fan of him before seeing their MCU movies. Okay, next up, And now this one, even if you take her just at MCU face value, Scarlet Witch, woo, very probably the most powerful character in the universe. Okay, maybe Captain Marvel vibing with her, but whatever. The fact that she can create everything, just whoop, 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 fire, love it. But she deals with too much pain, man. Everybody around her dies. I don't want to deal with that pain. I'm good. I'll pass. Mm-mm. Good. Next up, Peter Quill, Star-Lord himself. I love me some Star-Lord. He's fun. He's happy. He's buff. He's ripped. Love it. Loves music. He loves music. He loves dancing. I could totally vibe with that. Totally vibe with that. But self-centered, egotistical, too emotionally driven. Look at how he fucked up Infinity War. Like, the snap didn't even need to happen, but Quill couldn't hold it together. Can't do that. Next up, Doctor Strange. Powerful. Sorcerer Supreme. Doing some type of, yeah, Agamotto. All right. Love that. Has a time stone. Couldn't do it. Couldn't trust myself with it. Those character defects would come up, and I would rewind time and rewrite time and do some, I would cause havoc. I am positive of that.
That part.
Okay, next up, Winter Soldier. And it's probably partially just because of how much I'm loving the show right now, but there's elements of the Winter Soldier that I love. I love the comeback story. There's no character in the MCU that has a better comeback story. You know, he's mad loyal until he gets brainwashed, and then he's the most capable assassin ever. And then he gets unbrainwashed, and then he's back to being a super cool dude. And he's got a vibranium arm, bro. And he's now transitioned into the White Wolf, which isn't true within the comics, but whatever. Okay, love that. But no, there's just too many elements. I don't want to have to deal with the fact if I killed that many people, like, brutally. I don't think the spirituality within inside me, I don't think that would vibe too well. So we get to, and if anybody's watching live, you might have an idea where we're going with this one. We get to my favorite, not my favorite, sorry, the character that I would be, and here's why. And that is King T'Challa, Black Panther. Okay, before we get into the other reasons why, actually, we'll do those reasons first, and then I'm going to tell you a little story. First off, by drinking the heart-shaped herb, he's essentially Captain America. He's essentially Super Soldier Serum, essentially. I mean, he's got way cooler tech, though. But he's amazing hand-to-hand combat, super strong, vibranium suit, pretty much impenetrable. You know, yeah, way better tech, though. I mean, Cap only has a vibranium shield. T'Challa got a whole vibranium earth thing. So that in itself, and just the way that his suit can absorb energy and then back out, love it. Okay. He's got the science and tech levels of Tony Stark without having to deal with the egotistical arrogance of Tony Stark, thanks to his sister Shuri, who is essentially Tony Stark level. Fire, super smart, love it. All right. He's got access to tons of wealth because of the meteor of vibranium hitting Wakanda. Cool. So he's got money. Plus, he's a damn king. King T'Challa. I vibe with that. I super vibe with that. But the other element of it, and it's funny, because when I went to treatment, and I went to treatment on Valentine's Day of 2018, Black Panther, the movie, was just about to come out. And I was so hype about it. Literally, the last thing I did before going into treatment was we went to the Target right down the street from treatment, and I bought the Black Panther soundtrack, which was produced by Kendrick Lamar, and it features tons of TDE. And if you haven't listened to the soundtrack, do yourself a favor. Pause this right now and go listen to that soundtrack. It is incredible. And I listened to that soundtrack about 400 times a day. Okay, that doesn't work. But every single day I was in treatment. Loved it. But they had an activity. They had an activity for us to do in treatment where we made masks. And I decided to make a Black Panther mask. And it wasn't just because I was super excited about, you know, about the movie. It wasn't about that. It was about the parallels that I saw within myself and Black Panther. Because throughout the history of Wakanda, when T'Chaka was king, and again, if you don't like Marvel and you don't care about any of this, sorry. But this is a good tie-in. When T'Chaka was king, he wanted to have the entire world cut off. Nobody know about the resources, no open borders, no ability to help others, because, you know, what if it is leads to negativity and people trying to steal our vibranium, which inevitably happened, you know, what if cut all that off? And that's how I felt when I was in my active addiction. I was just completely cut off from the real world. I was living in this little bubble of depravity, of degradation, of unhappiness day after day. And it wasn't until I got into recovery that I was able to truly become who I am and who I'm becoming. And that's how I see the same kind of parallels, is once T'Challa became king, he realized that even though it might be painful, even though it might be difficult, even though it might cause problems, opening up and being truthful and honest is the best way to change and help the world. The best way to be most genuine to himself. And the fact that he has like unquestionable loyalty, he has very specific values and morals, which you can see by the end of Civil War when he's hanging out with Zemo. That in itself are the things that I really vibe with so much. So, plus, I mean, the dude can, like, he's got anything he ever wants. He wants to go flying? Cool, go hop in a spacecraft. You want to go drive the brand new Lexus? Hop in it, bro. Do your thing. In fact, hop on the roof. Your sister going to drive it from Wakanda. Let's go. Plus, like, claws, vibranium claws, boom, boom. I love it. I love it, love it. So that is the answer to that. That was very in-depth. There was a lot in there. I wanted to get to another question, but we will knock it out next week because I talked too much there about that. So if you have any questions that you would like me to discuss on air, answer, again, send them over to Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com, and we will go ahead and answer them on air. So we are almost out of time, but before we close up for the day, we got to do those clean time shout outs. So this is the part of the show where we recognize different people within recovery who have achieved a specific milestone, a universally accepted milestone. So that could be, you know, newcomer, which is anything up to 29 days. That can be 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, 18 months, or multiple years. Plus, we also like to give recognition for big numbers. So if you got 100 days, 1,000 days, 5,000, 10,000, send it over and we will give you a shout out. Again, if you are celebrating clean time between now and next Tuesday's episode, please send me a message either on social media or through the email on the website, or just Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com. Tell me your first name, how much time you're celebrating, and we will give you a shout out on air on the next episode. So first up, we got my boy Rocky with 60 days. Well done. Next up, we've got Leanna with 18 months. You get a book and a half. We do books for each year. Next up, we got my homegirl Emily. Congratulations with 2 years. Book, book. Next, we got TJ also with 2 years. Book, book. Then we got my boy Shay. Love this dude. Seen him since the beginning. Literally since the beginning. He's picked up 3 years. Boop, boop, boop. And finally, celebrating 8 years. And I want to give a special shout out to him and to his mother. His mother just passed away this last week. And, you know, I really want to let him know my prayers go out to him. And I got you, brother. If you need anything, give me a call. But we got to give that celebration for Richard with 8 years. That's how we do it. So congratulations, all those people who picked up time today. If you didn't pick up time today, don't use, and guess what? You will. And of course, send it over so we can give you a shout out. Well, everybody, we are officially at the end of our show. Great show. Hope everybody enjoyed it. And you know, I love each and every one of you for being here. Thank you so much for being a part of my recovery. Hopefully I can, you know, help be a part of your recovery, or hopefully I said something that touched you in some way. Wow.
Phrasing.
And at the end of the day, hopefully, you know, you feel something positive that you can give this recovery journey a shot. Because I can tell you from my experience, strength and hope, life is beautiful today. So again, thank you everybody for being here. If you haven't downloaded the episode, please download this episode wherever you consume podcasts. Please like, comment, subscribe on YouTube and all social media. Come back next week. Again, huge thank you to our episode sponsors, ETC by Emily and Metaphysical Minds. All that info in the description below. And again, huge thank you to Alice in Wonderland, Valentino Khan, Mad Deesa Records for anything. And I will see everybody next week. Now let's ride out. Let's go. I just wanna feel everything.